Hey, what's going on? This is Jonathan, John Mexican. This is the podcast, the initial podcast, actually. It's coming to you live. Actually not live. It's probably just the beginning of one. You're probably asking yourself, why do I want to listen to this podcast? Well, I ask myself, why do I want to start one? And motivation comes from Joe Rogan experience, I'm not going to lie. Also, the Church of What's Happening Now with Joey Diaz, and then The Fighter and The Kid, and all these other great podcasts, you know, Bill Burr's podcast. This is basically, you know, something that I wanted to put together just for me and just to let myself get out there. I think many a times there's not enough people just talking about what's going on with them, and that's where I'm at right now. A little bit about myself, I am originally from California. I come from a Mexican background. My parents are both from Mexico. One, my dad is from the capital of Mexico. For all the Mexicans out there, he's a Chilango, which is a person born in the capital of Mexico, and they have a certain way of talking in Spanish. Kind of like a preppy, kind of like a, you know, like I guess if to compare, if you're from Hollywood, I guess that's the type, you know, where you feel you are above every else class. And then my mom's from Jalisco, which is a down south Mexico, close to Colima. Colima's actually about 3 hours, but she lives up in the mountains. I remember my first time going to Colima, it was so many curves. That I had we had to stop in because I was puking my guts out, and then from there I was the first one actually. I have two older sisters, and I was the first one actually to be born in California. First born in California, and I knew by actually in Alta Hospital, and it starts from there. I mean, what is the path that I had to take? I think my parents both have, like any a lot of immigrants, come to the United States with that vision, I guess, to give their kids a better life. And the funny thing about it is my father in Mexico was an accountant. He was making good money. He actually had you know, a maid that helped my sisters and my mom in the house, but for some reason, my father, in his business, in his accounting firm, he was working with a bunch of, you know, animals, like trading animals, accounting for, you know, kind of different places that sold, you know, cows and horses, and I guess they might have thought he was skimming some money, you know, off the top or off the bottom, however you call it. And then from there, they wanted to do something to him. They wanted to make him the person to take the bullet. And in that moment, he decided to come to the United States. So we didn't have that. I guess my father didn't have that vision of, oh, you know, I'm going to Mexico to get a better life. So, you know, I think in his case, it was more of just change environment. I think in Mexico he was a lot more freer. And then when he got to Mexico, I mean, when he got to California, he started living in Traver, I think it's Traver, California, and he started to work in a the field. He was a field worker, you know, in the peaches and the grapes. And after a year or so, he brought my mom down and my two sisters down, you know, across the border, you know, illegal immigrants, you know, down here in the United States. And eventually they got their papers. Then I was born about 2 years, 3 years later in 1984. But 2 years later after that, my parents got divorced. So I think the funny thing about it is not so much that they got divorced. It was that my father stayed with us. My mother left, and we were the ones. My dad stayed with us. So I think it's a little bit different story, I guess, because our father raised us in the beginning. I guess that's why probably us, as my older sisters and myself, we have more connection towards my father. Because at one point he was the both figures in the household. And eventually, as time passed, I was able to see my mom again. She already had another relationship with a guy, I think she was pregnant with my little sister. And I always was a troublemaker. I don't think I was ever a kid that could stay still. I was rebellious. I just didn't know. I guess I just didn't know what I wanted, you know. For the longest time, you know, growing up, I always played the game of, yeah, I'm with my mom. Yeah, I'm with my dad. You know, if I don't like it here, I'll go there. If I don't like it there, I'd come back. So, I mean, I always had that game going. But eventually, you could only go so far with that type of mentality. And soon enough, you know, later I started getting into drugs. I felt like I was never a part of anything because I had moved a lot. You know, I always would go to elementary school and then get kicked out or get suspended. The only way I knew how to make friends was either making fun of the teacher or just being a bad guy, you know, getting into fights. I was never a good fighter or I was never a violent person, but I knew that sometimes you had to fight, and I fought a lot. I can't say I won all of them. I think the majority of them I lost, but I just didn't have, I guess, that whole letting go thing. So, and I had a lot of anger in me. So I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons why I fought people. Then from there, you know, I grew up a little bit. And in order for me to get along with certain people, as I moved back and forth, you know, I had to start smoking pot. I started smoking pot at a very young age. I think the effects is what I liked. I liked the effects. I liked the effects of weed. I mean, that's basically what I liked in the beginning. It laughed. I had the munchies. The effect itself was really what gave me the that feeling that, you know, everything was going to be okay. You know, even though things around me were not. Then as time passed, you know, you grow a little bit older, you get a little bit more, in that age where, you know, you start liking girls. And, in my case, the girls that I like were a little bit older, and also, they were used to already consuming drugs, and that's who I hang around with. And I started smoking meth and smoking coke with weed. But, you know, like any, I guess, person that consumes, I always say I could smoke these things, but I'll never inhale anything through my nose. I will not sniff anything through my nose. But that line was passed, you know, maybe a year later, 2 years later. And I started dabbling into that stuff. Eventually, I get caught the first time. You know, I was about 13 years old. And I got caught by the cops, actually. It was just more like a warning. They sent me back to the high school. I was a freshman in high school, and they gave us on-campus suspension. A family member of mine was going to AA, so I decided to go. And then from there, I only was there until I got the best of the family, meaning I was there only because the family needed me or wanted to see me there, and they thought maybe, you know, this would help. But I know deep down inside I didn't want need any help. I said I was too young. I still have a whole life ahead of me. And then I went back. You know, 4 months later I went back. But like anything, you know, these guys gave me some tools. Even though I wasn't there to listen, but I was there just to be there. But those guys that were in there, you know, planted something in my mind, you know. Then eventually I started consuming again, and then my father had to move to Detroit. One summer I went down there, and again, I go back to AA because I was only there just to join my father, and I admitted I was an alcoholic. I admitted I was a drug addict, but really didn't feel it. I really said to myself, you know, as soon as I get back, I'll continue consuming, you know, back to California. And that's exactly what I did. A couple of months later, 4 months exactly, actually, It was a party of a friend, and he just wasn't really a good friend, wasn't the best friend, was just an acquaintance, a person that I knew. And I started my first, I used to say I was a drug alcoholic, and I remember always saying to myself, you know, I'm a drug addict, I'm an alcoholic. I mean, I rarely drank, I never liked the taste. Growing up, I used to drink some tequila and Presidente and stuff like that, but I really didn't like the taste of alcohol. So I played that game, you know, I was like, you know, maybe I'm not an alcoholic, so I'll just drink me this alcohol that was in front of me. Now, you know, the ego itself for me was always saying to the friends or to my friends, like, I don't drink. So when they offered me, hey, do you want to drink? And I said, nah, you know, I don't drink. And as soon as they left, I stayed there, sitting there watching this beer. And I decided to drink, you know, just one, maybe just one. And I drank it. And I remember in that moment how things changed, you know, mentally, that I had painted this picture so real, so vivid in my mind that I was going to consume only one. But I remember when I drank that first beer, you know, I open it, I consume it, and I could feel the warmth coming from just from my mouth all the way to my stomach. And then once it hit my stomach, I could feel just like this warmth. Like this chill in my body, and all of a sudden, you know, my friends come back and they see me with a beer in my hand, and they told me, "Hey, I thought you don't drink," and I was like, "I always drank." And then from there, we drank more, and then they brought a box of wine, some red wine, you know, and we started drinking it. You know, we started drinking that, and then I remember just drinking so much that I went outside the house and I started throwing up, and I passed out. I passed out when I was throwing up, and my cousin waking me up. I remember him waking me up and then taking me to his house, and in the morning waking up and running towards the bathroom. And I started puking my guts out again, you know. And like anything, you know, I started remembering all these things these guys had told me. And in that moment, I was like, you know, I'm not going to drink again. But as soon as I get out, I remember seeing my aunt when I got out the bathroom, and I see my aunt, and she just nods her head like she knew, or something in her, or just because, you know, she raised me. I mean, my parents, when they were working, she was part of why I'm still alive today. But at that time, you know, I think she had that feeling of like I was her son as well. And when she seen me, she kind of nodded her head like, you know, not knowing what was going to happen to me. And like anything, you know, I remember what these guys in these meetings had told me. And I decided in that moment just to say, you know, maybe I do have a problem. Maybe I don't, you know. But like anything, I think in that moment I thought to myself, you already started. Why not continue? So that's what I did. I went back and I started consuming. And not the funny thing, but I think the things that these guys were telling me at that very young age was a prevention. You know, I think they were telling me, you know, if you haven't lived through these things, hadn't asked for money, if you hadn't slept in an abandoned car, if you haven't, you know, manipulated, lied, stealed, you know, did things, the necessary things in order to keep consuming, then I was. And like I said, at that very young age, I didn't believe it. And then when I started living these things that these AA members had told me, that's when I realized that, you know, maybe they were telling me the truth. But I was so already wrapped up in my drug addiction and my alcoholism that even though deep down inside, maybe honestly, I would ask myself or tell myself, you know, this is it. This is the last time, you know, this is the last drink or the last line of coke or this last pot smoke or whatever. This is it. But in this case, it wasn't. You know, I didn't have that willpower anymore. And I lived it like that, you know. There were things that I'm not proud of that I'd done. But at that moment, you know, there was no remorse. And I think that's the biggest thing that I could say is that in that moment, there was no remorse. There was no, you know, I feel bad for what I'm doing. Later that comes. But, you know, in the reality of things, it wasn't. From there, I decided to continue consuming, and then one day, my father actually was in California, And I remember every time my father was, you know, he was an AA member, and he never looked for me in the streets, you know. And I always asked myself, you know, and I asked him one day after I stopped drinking and using them, why he never looked for me, you know, why he never went to the streets, why he never, you know, my mom, my sisters, my older sister would look for me, but why not my father, you know? And he told me that I had hit bottom, that it didn't matter how hard it was for him to see me come out of a trash can or see me come out of the store. He had to see me hit bottom. And I didn't understand it, I guess, in the first months that I was sober. But you know, a father, you know, now that I have kids, I could see it. You know, I could feel it now. You know, you want the best for your kids, and when you see your son or your daughter being destructive or killing themselves. And then the words he told me that very last day before he, I mean, a couple of days before he left back to Detroit, Michigan. He said, you know, my mother had found me in the streets. She picked me up, you know. She gave me this talking like all the time, you know. But when she took me to my father, I remember him saying that, you know, my mother sent him to my father, and my father looks at me and tells me, don't come crying, that you hurt from what you're doing to your mother or to your family. He goes, you don't care, you don't feel. I'm willing to see you die in order for me to live. I'm going to Detroit to help out people that really need help. And that hit me. That hit me hard. Hit me in my heart, I guess. And my mother didn't understand, so she says, you know what, come with me, son. You know, your father don't love you. But I remember that day. I remember going back to my mom's house. I was about 15, almost 16 years old. And I remember looking myself in the mirror for the very first time. Really, actually, honestly, looking myself in the mirror. And I was, I'm not a dark-skinned guy. I'm more of a brownish guy. But I think at that time, I was real dark, dark, dark brown because of walking in the sun, you know. Walking back and forth in the streets. I remember looking at myself, and I always had a sleepy eye, but this, you know, sometimes you just let yourself go, and the sleepy eye, you know, was like excessively sleepy, you know. And I looked myself in the mirror, and I remember looking at my shirt, I could see my ribs. I was getting eaten up by the drugs, you know. And I remember the next day, my mother took me to my sister's house where my father was staying, and there was a Laker game coming on. There was a Laker game, and I remember what he had told me was going to Detroit. And I remember looking at him and wanted to tell him I wanted to go. You know, I want to go to Detroit. And but still, every time I wanted to say it to him, I would get stuck, like something in my throat would get stuck, like I couldn't say it. And he eventually asked me, hey, Jonathan, you want to go to Detroit with me? And in that moment, I remember saying yes, and I hugged him, and I cried. You know, I ain't gonna lie, I cried a little bit. But then again, you know, a person even then, like even in that moment, it was so true, it was so honest. But then again, I remember telling him, you know, I gotta say goodbye to my cousins, to my family. And I remember going to my cousin's house the day prior to us leaving to Detroit. And I got high. I remember my cousins were like, well, let's get high for the very last time. And smoke some pot, smoke some weed. And I remember taking some weed with me. And I remember seeing my aunt. You know, she passed away already, but at that time, she was still alive. And remember, she told me, you know, the next time I see you, I want to see you chunky. You know, in Spanish, la próxima vez que te miro, te quiero mirar gordo, you know. Because they seen, you know, that I think my aunt was really a big reason why I'm still alive today, too. Because she would give me food. She would ask me, hey, Jonathan, you want something to eat? And I would say, nah, you know, tia, you know, aunt, I already ate. And she would leave the kitchen and leave, you know, the plate or the pans with the food in there, and I think she knew I would run in and eat something and then leave, you know. The many days I was outside cold, you know, and in the fire, you know, we had a big old dumpster with wood on it and we're burning it. And she let me in her house, you know. There was a pride thing, but there also was a feeling that I didn't belong anymore. You know, I didn't belong in society, or I wouldn't belong in with a family or something like that. And so when she told me that, I kind of took it to heart. I remember my cousins, after they heard her say that, I thought to myself, yeah, you know, whatever, I was high anyways. And the next day we go to get ready to go to Detroit, and I remember going on a bus. I had a bag of weed in my shoe, you know, a small bag. I remember like a dime maybe at the time. And I go through the bus. I go to Los Angeles Airport. I fly with the pot. You know, I get to Detroit, and you know, I get there. And I didn't really wanted to stop. You know, I just wanted to change something. You know, I wanted to change something in my life. That's basically what I wanted. I didn't want to stop doing what I was doing, but I just needed to change. And I remember my father took me to AA meetings again, and and I remember thinking to myself, you know, what was this about? I mean, you know, I went there, I've been there before. I thought to myself, this wasn't gonna work. You know, that this meetings weren't gonna work anymore. I already been here before, but I knew there was things that it was more than just going and sitting down and listening or to these guys speak or whatever, or talk about their experiences, but I remember I went 30 days going there. I still had this bag of weed. And in one of those, they call them conscious meetings or business meetings, I guess they call them in English. I got to this group. Let me backtrack. The group that I was attending was called Volver a Vivir, which is to live again. And I think that name was right. A name it was required for me. So in after 30 days attending there, they had a conscious meeting or you know, what they call a business meeting, and they needed some people to for some positions. And in one of those, it was secretary. And I remember you know, no one wanted to have that position. And one of the members there asked my father, hey, is this guy an alcoholic? And then says, why are you asking me? Ask him. So then they asked me, hey, Jonathan, are you an alcoholic? And I remember standing up and saying, my name is Jonathan, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I said it real low because I really didn't want to admit it, you know. But I remember in that moment, and I speak about this, and it's very true in my heart. In that moment with those guys done, where they did, it returned something in me, something that I probably had lost many, many months or years ago, was the feeling that I was worth something, the feeling that I was useful to something, to someone, to some, you know, somebody. And them giving me that position, because I remember that guy saying, oh, that's good enough. Sit down here and you're going to be the secretary. And in that moment, that feeling was true. And I remember after that, I remember what the meeting was about. I was writing, you know, whatever the points were in that meeting. But the following time had passed. And I remember thinking to myself, I did the same thing. You know, I went back to the basement we were living in, me and my father, you know. And I looked myself in the mirror. I told myself I was doing the exact same things that I did before, you know. I had admitted I was alcoholic, but I really didn't believe it. And so I grabbed that bag of weed, and I remember throwing it in the toilet and flushing it. And I started the path. since June 17th of 2000, you know, had not consumed drugs or alcohol. And that started my path into what it is today. I'm here because of those people, those first, you know, 10, 12 guys that were in those meetings that gave me a little bit of their life, gave me pieces of their life, gave me pieces of their experience. And then from there, you know, going to Chicago, going to Toronto, going to Montreal, going to Hamilton, going to Windsor, going to Wisconsin, going to Ohio, you know, all these places where I was meeting these members, you know, these members. And they showed me there was a different life out there, you know. I was stuck in a small little town called London, California, where, man, this is all I knew. You know, I grew up there. I have love for everybody that's still there, you know. That's where I come from. You know, I wouldn't be as resilient as I am today if it wasn't for being from there. You know, I think many of us that grew up there are – we have this pride of being there, even though, you know, I no longer live there. But, you know, just to know that I came from there, you know. And then from there, you know, I was young. I was real young. And I remember always having different ideas. I was always different. I didn't really click a lot with a lot of the guys there because my experience was a little bit harsher. You know, a lot of those guys came in with some problems, but not as bad. I think their obsession or their disease of alcoholism wasn't as bad as my disease of alcohol and drugs. So I decided after a year of being sober to open up a house, like a rehab almost. It was a 24-hour group. And it opened, and you know, with a lot of people that wanted to support it, and then when it opened, a lot of people left. But eventually, it opened, and I remember always thinking to myself, you know, all these guys from the streets, you know, the bums, the guys you see, you know, that are drinking, you know, out of the old brown paper bag, you know, their vodka or whatever, you know, or using crack or heroin and stuff like that. I remember seeing some of those guys come in, and I think to myself, you know, if these guys, if one guy is able to stay sober, this guy would be able to help out another person, you know. And sometimes they would have a month clean and then go back out. And, you know, and I would be frustrated. And then I would ask another member from there. And then it would give me a kind of like a motivator type thing where they're like, you know, it's not rare the person that leaves is the rare that person that stays. And, you know, it was very true. You know, I seen people come and go and I was still there, though. And that was an important thing, too. They were telling me, you know what, are you still here? And I would say yes. I'm like, well, then just keep on coming back. You know, and eventually after, you know, I was at that time still going to high school, and then I became, you know, into high school. I was, you know, I was a funny guy. I was somewhat popular, and I became, you know, part of the prom, being a, prom king. You know, I ended up going to the prom, all these different little things that I lived, that I thought I'd never live, like, or be, you know, I was popular. I was, you know. So eventually, I get out of high school. I didn't know what to do with myself. Didn't know what to do. I remember telling one of my teachers, a sociology teacher there, and I told him I wanted to join the army, just joking. You know, 9/11 had just happened, so you kind of knew that we were about to go to war. But, yeah, I focused myself on what was the program, you know, was AA, was the 24-hour group, you know, the rehab. At a very young age, that's basically what I lived through. You know, I said I was going to be a mechanic or something simple, you know, and work and provide because really my heart was in it, you know. And then I had a resentment towards my father or my sponsor, you could say, because, you know, he's an older man, you know, and a lot of people wanted to get help from him. And I was younger. I was way younger. I was about 17, 18, and no one wanted to get help from me. I understand it now, but at the time, you know, I really wanted that. So I moved to California. I went back to California. I was only supposed to be there for a little bit, but I ended up staying there. And I stayed there to open up another meeting, open another group. The same exact type, you know, Prisoners in Liberation, number two, 24-hour group. But then again, you know, as my plans were that, you know, and there were true plans, a little bit of resentment that made me open it, but I really wanted for it to be successful when I start passing the message to other members and newcomers. And eventually, you know, I got tired, you know, I got tired of continuously serving and feeling like nothing was given back to me. So from there, I ended up going to college. I met my wife, actually, or my girlfriend at the time, and I remember meeting her and not knowing or doing something I probably never did before. You know, before I used to date girls, you know, in high school or before high school, in high school, that I knew they liked me. And they said, hey, you know, we like you or whatever. And it was easy, you know, it was easy. I could just say, you know, hey, you know, I want to go out with you. Because I knew there wasn't going to be any rejection. And then with my wife today or at the time, you know, she was a coworker, asking her was something different for me. So when I asked her, I think it was genuine. You know, I really did want to go out with her. And we kicked it off. Eventually, we moved in together after 3 months of dating. And I think her family wasn't approving of it. You know, they thought she was pregnant, but she wasn't. We just wanted to move in together, you know. And then she was supporting me through, not supporting me, but giving me, well, supporting me and, you know, motivating me to go to college. And she was working. I was working in the mornings. And I ended up going to college. And like a lot of Hispanics, negativity really gives us that fuel. And that's basically what fueled me into believing I can finish college. So I went to San Joaquin Valley College, and I kind of knew maybe something was going to happen because I remember in one of my drawers in my mom's house I was staying in, I left that there. Like they had sent a letter to my mom's house, and I opened it, and I remember seeing the San Joaquin Valley thing, and I left it there, and then I lived there for like maybe almost a year. I'm not sure exactly when I first moved to California again, but there that's where I realized that. I went back, I looked at it, and I went there, and I got all information. I joined. What fueled me was the negativity. You know, family members and myself, and some of my wife's family members were like, you know, this guy probably isn't going to finish it. And 15 months later, I graduated from college. You know, an associate science degree. I go there and then I get a job, a supervisor job. I'm like, man, you know, things are looking up. You know, things are going good. I'm getting paid a little bit better. You know, I get my first car. You know, I get my first car. So there's a lot of things that are positive coming in my life. You know, my wife gets pregnant, or she was pregnant. And then for some reason, you know, the Army came into play. You know, the Army. And I didn't know at the time what was going to be. You know, I just, you know, usually, you know, you go to college, you get a job, and then, you know, you stabilize yourself, and then you just keep on going. But for me, I think I was always contrary to everything that was supposed to happen, you know. So I decided to join the Army, and my family were like, why are you joining the Army? Or even my wife's family were like, why is he joining the Army? You know, he'd get a good job. But I joined the Army in September of 2009. My wife was still pregnant, and they promised me the world, and they promised me that I was gonna be there for my daughter's birth. And, you know, like anything, everything's sacrifice, and I wasn't. I wasn't there for her birth. I wasn't there at all. And but I was still in training. Actually, when I seen my daughter the first time, I was a month old. The training itself, I was never physically gifted. I was never a basketball player, football player in high school or junior high, nothing like that. I wasn't in top shape. I wasn't in anything you can consider a athlete. I was just normal Joe Schmo, you know, that just wanted something different. And I think that's where, like, me and my father kind of connect in that matter, that when he came from Mexico, he wanted something different, you know. And I think in that moment, I wanted something different, you know, something like abnormal, I guess, because everybody's life is normal, you know, everything that they do is normal. And I think now, since I was in AA, you know, before then, and when I went to college, I stopped going, but it's just that feeling of service, you know. And when I was in AA, you know, serving those guys that were in a bunk, that were, you know, in the streets, was one of the, probably the greatest feelings in the world. And then now that I had joined the Army, I had finished the training, I went to my first unit, that feeling of service was there. And I thought to myself, you know, wow, you know, we're only probably 1%, 2% of the people or the population in the United States that serves. And the ability to be able to serve a country is good, you know, it's rewarding. So that's why I probably wouldn't have changed any of the aspects of my life and things that I went through just to get to where I'm at right now. I'm still in the military right now. And I believe that's basically what it is for me, you know, service. And I think right now doing this podcast is of service as well. In this podcast, I will share things about my life experiences, things that I have went through. Things that I'm going through, things that I have seen. And that's the type of things that I believe will make you stronger, you know, adversities. Because of those things, you know, I've been deployed and things like that. But that's basically what my podcast is about, you know, speaking what's going through my mind, things that I might see on TV that or movies or MMA fights, you know, boxing fights. I'm just an all-around type of guy that's going to give his points of view, and then eventually, hopefully, get strong enough to where I'll probably have some guys on my podcast, you know. But this is the initial one. It's by myself, solo. But I'm grateful to be part of this, this era of whatever's on your mind, put it out there on the web and let people know, hey, you know, I'm here. Or you could Twitter me at, if you like it, you know, if you like it, you could Twitter me at J-O-N Mexican, so John Mexican. I'm also on Facebook, Jonathan Martinez, but John Mexican, yeah. I don't know what name I'll give this podcast, but I'll probably give it some type of name. But for now, just, I guess, the John Mexican podcast, you know, for now, okay? And then I'll probably change it later on. But yeah, from here, we'll hopefully we'll put some more on and, you guys will listen. All right. Laters.